President Lyndon Johnson signed the Fair Housing Act as part of the Civil Rights Act in 1968. Among other things, it makes it illegal to refuse to sell or rent a home to someone based on race, religion, national origin, or other factors. But my next guest argues the federal government was behind the segregation of American neighborhoods in the first place. Richard Rothstein is a policy analyst at the Economic Policy Institute and author of the book The Color of Law, A Forgotten History of How Our Government Segregated America. He joins me. And Richard, a lot of people think of housing discrimination in terms of landlords or banks or neighbors. But while those groups were involved, it seems like you're saying they weren't the only ones involved and maybe not even the biggest factors.
You're right. We have a national myth that the reason that every residential area in the country is segregated by race is because of something we call de facto segregation, all private activity. But in fact, it was federal government and state and local government policy, explicit racial policy, implemented in the 20th century that ensured that African Americans and whites could not live near each other in any metropolitan area in the country. And because we have the myth that the government wasn't involved, much less created it, we feel powerless to do anything about it. Once we understand that racial segregation by neighborhood is a government creation, we can understand that we have an obligation to do something about it, to reverse it, to enact policies that would counter the segregation policies that the government once followed.
What was the government's rationale back then for doing this?
The government's assumption was that segregation was acceptable. It began really not after the Civil War, but a period of Jim Crow began in which government officials assumed that they had the right to segregate African Americans. They did it in all areas of life. It wasn't just housing. Most of the other areas were reversed during the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s. The one we left untouched is residential segregation by neighborhood. And the reason we did that, we left it untouched, is because it's hard to do. If we abolish racial segregation on buses, the next day you sit anywhere you want on the bus. If you abolish segregation in neighborhoods, the next day things don't look much different. And so in order to avoid tackling this very difficult reversal of unconstitutional policy, we've convinced ourselves that it wasn't unconstitutional at all, that government had nothing to do with it, that it was all private activity.
So are there still laws on the books, either the federal law or in state or city ordinances, that allow and in some cases require racial segregation?
No, but the policies that the government followed in the 20th century were so powerful that they still determine the landscape of today. For example, the entire country was suburbanized. Suburbs were created around every metropolitan area, all white suburbs, by explicit federal policy that was designed to suburbanize the white population into single-family homes in all white suburbs and explicitly prohibited African Americans from participating in that. Subdivisions you're familiar with, like Levittown, east of New York City, 17,000 homes. Those homes sold to whites only because the FHA would not permit Levitt to sell to African Americans for about $100,000 in today's terms. Today, those homes sell for $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. They're unaffordable to African Americans, or whites for that matter, who are working class. It's not possible simply by passing a Fair Housing Act, as we did in 1968, to desegregate Levittown unless we address the enormous wealth creation, the wealth disparity that resulted from the appreciation of those homes. White families gained wealth from owning homes in Levittown. African Americans who were required by federal policy to continue renting in cities gained no such wealth. And unless that's remedied, we can't undo the segregation of white suburbs that were created by government around the country.
Well, how do you go about doing that? I mean, it seems like you're trying to make up for something that happened in some cases many, many years ago. And it seems like it would be a really difficult task to try to do that redistribution and try to make up for the wealth that African-American families could not have created by not owning these homes.
Well, it's not any more difficult than it was to create it in the first place. The policies to undo this are fairly easy to imagine. We could, for example, have a policy that subsidized African Americans to buy homes in suburbs that are now unaffordable to them, but that would have been affordable had they been permitted to purchase them in the mid-20th century. We could, in these suburbs, for example, prohibit zoning ordinances that lock in the racial exclusivity of the suburbs by prohibiting the construction of even single-family homes on small lot sizes or townhouses or other ways that we could desegregate and diversify those communities. So the policies aren't hard to imagine. What's difficult is developing the will to do it, accepting the responsibility to undo residential segregation, just as we accepted the responsibility to undo segregation in other areas that the government created in the 20th century.
Do you think sort of the reluctance to maybe do this is on the part of governments or maybe on the part of residents of some of those neighborhoods that would be affected?
Well, it's both. But residents will accede to government policy that's justified, just as we acceded to desegregation policies in the mid-20th century. If there was a broad understanding of the unconstitutionality of our racial boundaries and the necessity of implementing policies to desegregate, people would come to accept those policies.
Have you seen or heard anything in the last months or years that lead you to believe that any of those things are going to happen?
Oh, yes. We're having a national conversation about race today that was inconceivable just a few years ago. The Black Lives Matter movement, the demolition of statues commemorating slavery, often by demolition led by white elected Southern politicians, so something that was unheard of just a few years ago. So I think we're having a national conversation that's more passionate, more accurate about the legacy of slavery, the legacy of Jim Crow than we've ever had before. Of course, we're a very polarized country, but I'm hopeful that the accurate conversation will develop and a will to address this last remaining aspect of having an apartheid society will develop.
That's Richard Rothstein, author of The Color of Law, A Forgotten History of How Our Government Segregated America. Richard, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.